The angle of the late afternoon sun brought out a kaleidoscope of colors in the buttes and hills, the coulees and ravines of western North Dakota. Pinks, reds, blacks, greens, yellows, and rich browns. The rider, a well-muscled man with wide shoulders and a short, bull-like neck, paused for a moment to enjoy the dancing light and changing hues before he sloped down a long hill toward a ford of the river ahead. Teddy Roosevelt was sitting in a fine silver-studded saddle, mounted on a superb bay horse, wearing a new Stetson hat and glasses that now and then flashed in the setting sun. A full canteen, bedroll, and saddle rifle showed that he was either planning to spend the night on the range or would be able to do so should the need arise. To Roosevelt's right was a long, rather magnificent escarpment, which looked for all the world like a shelf of books in his library. The difference was that the cliff was here in the Dakota Territory, whereas his library was way back in New York City. As owner of Elkhorn Ranch, Roosevelt could have sent any of his hands out to search for straying cattle, but he preferred to do it himself because of these long, lonely rides. Gave him just the solitude he was looking for. He had come to Dakota shortly after the Republican National Convention nominated James G. Blaine as candidate for president in the upcoming election. As Roosevelt had promised, he remained true to Senator John Edmunds until the last ballot. Once Blaine received the nomination, Theodore Roosevelt, as a good Republican, pledged his support for the campaign. But true to Joe Murray's warning, Blaine shut Roosevelt out. He wasn't offered any position whatever in the campaign. Politically, that wasn't good for Roosevelt. But personally, he welcomed it. It allowed him the freedom of coming to Dakota and spending time on his ranch, healing from the pain that he still felt. Roosevelt slapped his legs against the side of his horse and started toward the sound.
Hold steady there, little fellow. Be of stout heart. I'm coming to your rescue.
Roosevelt found the calf hung up in a briar patch. Dismounting, he helped the animal free itself, then set it to running.
Go now. Join your mother and tell her of your great adventure.
Roosevelt remounted, then continued with his ride. As evening came on, Thad Howard's horse went lame.
You worthless son of a bitch! What are you doing? You are leaving me stranded out here at night?
He kicked the horse, trying to make it get up. The horse tried one more time and fell again. This time, he didn't even lift his head.
I'll tell you this, you sorry bag of bones. I'll not be wasting a bullet on you. You can just lie there and die in your own good time. I'm through with you!
Thad removed the saddle and saddlebag. Throwing the saddle on his shoulder, he started walking. But after a few yards, tossed the saddle away in disgust.
God damn it, stupid animal!
He continued on with the saddlebags, but after less than a mile, threw them away too. 2 miles later, he took the last swallow of water from his canteen and tossed it aside as well.
God damn it, old hell.
Falcon had only spent the one night in Belfield. He and Billy Puckett had stayed at the dinner table, talking long after the other diners had cleared out. It wasn't that they were reminiscing about old times. The times they'd shared had been a period of no more than 3 months, and that had been a little over 30 years ago. But they did catch up on each other's lives, and they shared stories of their adventures during the war. As it turned out, they had faced each other several times during the war, though it wasn't until the incident at Chattanooga that they had come in direct, or nearly direct, contact with each other. Falcon left the next morning just after sunrise. When he'd left McAllister's Valley to come up here for a visit with Billy Puckett, he'd planned to take the train back. In fact, he bought a two-way ticket. But the more he thought about it, the less interest he had in going back home. The old wanderlust that had pulled at him for so many years had grabbed hold of him again. Falcon wandered around with no particular destination in mind for about 2 weeks. He was heading back to Belfield for supplies when he came across one sorry-looking hombre on the trail. The man looked exhausted, sunburned, and very thirsty. Stopping, Falcon tossed his canteen to the man.
Here. You look like you could use a drink.
Thanks.
You been walking long?
My horse stepped in a prairie dog hole 3 days ago. Broke his leg and I had to put him down. I've been afoot ever since.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about that, but there's a town just over the ridge line not more than 5 miles from here. It's called Belfield. If you cut through that pass, you can make it by noon.
Thanks.
He handed the canteen back, and as Falcon was distracted while hooking it onto his pommel, Thad drew his gun.
You don't recognize me, do you, mister?
Should I?
Well, there's no reason you should. It was pretty dark that night, and I was wearing a mask. Sure as hell recognize you, though.
You're the train robber that got away. You're the one that got away.
With the money, yeah. Too bad I ain't got none of it left. But me and my brothers had a fine old time, I tell you that. Say, whatever happened to them boys that robbed the train with me? Did they go back to jail?
No, I killed them.
Yeah, figured you did. Just wanted to see if you would admit it.
You don't seem all that broken up over it.
Well, why the hell should I? With them dead, me and my brother just had more money to spend. Now climb the hell down off that horse.
Why would I want to do that?
Because if and you don't, I'm going to put a bullet in your gizzard.
All right, you've convinced me.
Falcon dismounted and handed over the reins.
Now, I hear tell if you walk through that pass, it won't take you more than, an hour or so to reach that little town. Only thing is, you're going to have to go alone.
How about leaving me my canteen?
Thad started to reach for it, then smiled and shook his head.
You think I'm fool enough to fall for my own trick?
You're a smart one, all right. By the way, his name's Diablo.
What?
The horse. His name's Diablo.
Buddy, I don't give a good goddamn what your horse's name is. I aim to ride him. I'll make a pet out of him. Come on, horse.
Diablo didn't move.
Come on, horse. Giddy up. Yeah. Yeah.
Diablo remained still.
What the hell's wrong with this horse?
I don't know. He works fine for me.
Well, say something to him.
Now, Diablo.
Whoa!
Thad's gun fell aside as he flew through the air. He hit the ground hard and lay there for a long moment trying to collect his senses and get his breath. Finally, he got up onto his hands and knees, shook his head a few times, and stood.
Are you in one piece?
Yeah, I guess so.
Looking up, Thad noticed that Falcon had not only remounted his horse, he was holding a gun. And the gun was pointing directly at him.
How the hell did you do that?
Pick up that canteen, take another drink of water. You've got a pretty good walk in front of you.
Falcon, I didn't expect to see you again so soon.
Puckett smiled broadly when he saw the man Falcon was bringing in.
I'll be damned, that's Thad Howard.
I ran across him about 5 miles out of town. He's the other train robber.
He's also a murderer. Turns out he killed a sheriff over in Blue Springs. He was tried and convicted for it, too, but escaped jail before they could hang him.
Well, he ain't gonna get out of our jail. Come along, you. In the jail with you.
You know, there's a reward for him.
Puckett opened up the desk drawer and pulled out a voucher, then made it out to Falcon McAllister.
Take this over to the bank. It's good for $500.
The hell you say? Well, that more than pays for my trip up here, don't it?
I reckon so. What are you gonna do with all that money? As if that's a lot of money to you. Your pa was one of the richest men in Colorado before he died, and you don't strike me as the kind of man that spends a lot. If I had to guess, I'd say you had just about every penny your pa left.
Maybe a little more. But found money is always good. And as to what I plan to do with it, well, I thought I'd go down to the saloon, have myself a good lunch, a few drinks, maybe get into a friendly game of cards.
Well, it must be good to be a man of leisure.
Falcon started toward the door, then stopped and turned back toward Billy.
I've been thinking about Judge Heckmeyer.
You don't want to go thinking too much about him, Falcon. Like I told you, he's a fair and honest man, but he ain't someone you want to be against you.
No, it's not that. It's the name. I told you I'd heard that name before. Now I remember where it was. Does he have a daughter? Oh, I'd say about 20 or 21 now.
Yes, he does. Her name is...
Anna.
Now, how could you possibly know that? She's been away to school for 4 years now.
In New York?
Yeah, in New York. Falcon, you want to tell me what's going on?
I met her.
Where?
In New York. You may recall from our conversation the other night, my brother, Andrew, and my sister, Rosanna, live in New York.
Yeah, actors, right?
Actors, musicians, composers. It's clear they got all the talent in the family. Anyway, about 3 years ago, I went up to New York to visit them, and I saw one of their plays. There were three young girls, women, who needed tickets to the play. I let them sit in the box with me.
And you say one of them was Anna Heckmeyer?
Yeah, from Medora, Dakota Territory, she said.
Mm-hmm. That'd be her, all right. I'll be damned, this is a small world, ain't it?
Deputy Merrill came back to the main office.
I got him locked up back there. So, what do we do next?
How'd you like to spend a day or two in Bismarck?
Oh, that'd be great. My sister lives there.
Go to the territorial attorney's office and get a warrant transfer for Thad Howard and tell him to send the hangman.
We gonna hang him here?
That's the instructions we received. They don't want to take a chance on his escaping in transit again. So, whoever takes him into custody will have a warrant transfer that will authorize execution of the court findings. In this case, a hanging.
If I hurry, I can catch a 12:15.
Falcon, you gonna stay around for the proceedings?
What? Oh, you mean the hanging? Nah, watching a man's neck stretch ain't my idea of a good time.
The little town of Belfield sat baking in the late summer sun. To the six riders approaching from the east, the distant collection of sun-bleached wooden buildings was so much a part of the land that the town could have been the result of nature rather than man. Percy Shaw, the youngest of the riders, slipped his canteen off the pommel and took a drink. The water was sour and tepid, but his tongue was dry and swollen. He ran the back of his hand across his mouth, then recorked the canteen and hooked it back onto his saddle.
Hey, Aaron, what do you say we stop into the saloon and get us a few beers? I gotta have me something to wet this here dust we've been chewing on for the last 10 days.
You just had a drink of water.
Aaron Childers was the oldest and the acknowledged leader of the six riders, which also included his two brothers, Frank and Corey, and their cousins, Dalton and Ethan Yerby.
Yeah, but the water in this here canteen is beginning to taste like piss.
Well, now, just how the hell would you know what piss tastes like? You been drinking a lot of it lately, have you?
No, I ain't drunk no piss, Frank. I can guess what it tastes like. Tastes like it's water. What do you say, Aaron? Can we get us a couple of beers before we take care of our business?
We ain't going into no saloons in this town. If we was to start drinking with the locals, the next thing you know, everyone's gonna have a good description of us.
Well, hell, you think they ain't gonna have a description of us anyway? The moment we rob the bank, every one of them's gonna know what we look like.
They ain't gonna recognize us if we do the job right. You just do what I tell you. We'll be in that bank, have the money, and then be out of there again before anyone in town knows what hit it. Then we ride into the next town, we can go in style. Why, we'll have enough money to swim in beer if we want to. Women, hotels, restaurants, gambling money. We'll have enough to do anything we want.
Yeah, that sounds good.
You're through bellyaching about beer then, are you, Percy?
Oh yeah, I'm through, Aaron.
Good. Now let's get on with it. You boys, check your pistols. Ready?
Ready.
Corey?
Yeah, me too.
We're ready then.
Falcon McAllister was sitting at a small table in the back of the Blue Dog Saloon. On the table in front of him was a meal of vegetable soup and biscuits. Admittedly, it wasn't the best fare, but at least it wasn't trail cooked. As Billy had instructed, Falcon had taken his voucher to the bank and now had in his pocket $500 in cash. Because it was midday, the saloon was nearly empty. As a result, Kate Smathers was the only bar girl working. The others would come tonight when the saloon was busier. Kate was standing at the end of the bar nursing a sarsaparilla.
Sure is quiet in here.
Yeah.
The bartender was washing and wiping glasses. He nodded toward the table where Falcon was having his lunch.
That fellow over there is Falcon McAllister. Why don't you go talk to him?
Why? Looks like all he's interested in is eating. I'm not likely to make any money from him.
Well, maybe you will, maybe you won't. But I do know that he's flush right now.
Huh? And how do you know that?
He brought in Thad Howard this morning. Sheriff Puckett paid him the reward money.
He already paid the reward?
Yep.
How come he got paid so fast?
Turns out the sheriff and McAllister are old friends.
Kate looked over toward Falcon. What she saw was a big man concentrating on his meal. His long hair was the color of winter straw. The bartender drew a beer and handed it to Kate.
He's already paid for this.
Kate took the glass over to Falcon's table. She sat down without being invited. She pasted a big smile on her face, but when he looked up at her, his eyes were hard and cold. For a moment she felt a twinge of fear. She had infringed upon his privacy, and the expression on his face indicated that he did not appreciate it. Then he relaxed and the coldness fell away, to be replaced by a face that was, at a minimum, interesting, and could even be considered handsome. It was at least inviting, and her smile returned.
Frank said you ordered that there beer.
Oh, thank you.
He also said you brought in Thad Howard.
Uh-huh, I did.
And you already got your reward?
Yep.
So, what are you gonna do with all that money?
Spend it.
The boardwalks were filled with men and women moving from store to store in Belfield, attending to their daily commerce. A farmer parked his wagon in front of the mercantile, and his wife and two children jumped down to run inside the store, even as six men rode by in the street out front. They were all wearing long white duffers, and they continued on into the town until they reached the bank of Belfield. There, Aaron, Percy, Ethan, and Dalton dismounted and handed their reins to Corey. Corey and Frank remained in the saddle and kept their eyes open. The other four pulled their kerchiefs up over the bottom halves of their faces and, drawing their guns, pushed open the door and barged inside. There were six customers and a teller in the bank.
You men get your hands up and stand over against the wall.
While the other three kept everyone covered, Aaron hopped over the railings to go behind the teller cage. Pulling a cloth bag from his pocket, he held it out toward the teller.
Put all your money into this here bag.
Trembling, the teller emptied his cash drawer. Across the street from the bank, young Marcus Wise was standing at the window of the mercantile store. He had come into town to go shopping with his mother, and as a reward for being a good boy, she had bought him a licorice whip. Eating the licorice, he was staring at the bank across the street. Marcus had seen the men pull kerchiefs up over their faces and go inside. Now he saw the people inside putting up their hands.
Mama, look across the street at those men. They're funny.
You look, dear. I'm busy right now.
She picked up an apple peeler.
Mr. Dunnigan, are you telling me this will peel an apple?
That will indeed, Mrs. Wise. It'll automatically peel and core an apple just as slick as a whistle.
My, what will they think of next?
Everyone is holding their hands up in the air.
What did you say, Marcus?
Look over there, see? All those people in the bank are holding their arms in the air.
Dunnigan walked over to the window and looked across the street toward the bank.
Oh my God, the boy's right! They're robbing the bank!
Another customer heard Dunnigan and ran outside.
They're robbing the bank! They're robbing the bank!
Mrs. Weiss, grab Marcus and get to the back of the store. Get down behind the counter.
Dunnigan grabbed a double-barrel shotgun from beneath his store counter, broke it open, and slipped two shells into the chamber. Inside the bank, the teller's hands trembled as he took money from the teller's drawer to drop into the sack Percy Shaw was waiting for. In a surprisingly short time, he handed the bag to Percy. Percy looked down into the bag and saw just a few bills and some change.
What the hell? What are you trying to pull, mister?
Put it all in there.
It is all in there.
There's not enough here to have a good drunk. If you know what's good for you, you'll put more money in here.
Please, mister. You see the door? I've put everything in there.
What the hell's the holdup?
This son of a bitch is holding out on us.
He showed the sack to Aaron.
This is all we got.
The hell with that.
Aaron came around behind the teller's counter and stuck the end of his pistol into the bank teller's nose, pushing so hard that it began to bleed.
Are you telling me this is all the money there is in this bank?
No, there's more money in the safe.
Aaron looked over at Percy.
Can't you do a damn thing right? Do I have to do everything myself? All right, mister. Get the money out of the safe.
Well, I can't.
What do you mean you can't? I'm holding a gun here.
No, sir, I can't. I can't open the safe. I don't have the combination.
God damn it, you work here, don't you?
Yes, sir, I do. But Mr. Harkins owns the bank, and he's the only one who knows the combination.
All right, get him.
He's out of town for the day, and he won't be back till late tonight.
Suddenly, the front door opened. Frank, who didn't have the bottom half of his face mask, stuck his head in.
Aaron, you better come quick. Somebody's seen these fellas with their hands up and went running down the street yelling that the bank was being robbed. We gotta get out of here.
I ain't going nowhere till I get the rest of the money.
He pointed his pistol toward the teller and cop.
Open the damn safe! The
teller began to shake uncontrollably.
Mister, don't you think I would if I could? I sure as hell don't want to die. I can't open that safe.
Oh, Jesus Christ, he's pissing his pants. You know what, Aaron? I believe.
Shit.
Oh! Aaron brought his pistol down on the teller's head and dropped to the floor.
What are we gonna do now?
Aaron looked around the bank and at the terrified faces of the customers, all of whom were standing against the wall with their hands still raised. Then, with the sack of money clutched firmly in his hand, Aaron vaulted back over the teller's counter.
Let's go!
As the men emerged from the bank, they saw Dunnigan across the street in front of the mercantile store, his shotgun raised. The recoil of both barrels being fired kicked back so hard that the gun went almost straight up. Dunnigan missed, but saw the result of his double-aught buckshot as it hit the front window of the bank.
You son of a bitch!
Frank fired back at Dunnigan, and the bullet hit the pillar that was supporting the porch overhang. Realizing then that he had fired both rounds and had nothing left to shoot with, Dunnigan darted quickly back into the store.
Come on! Come on! Get mounted! Get mounted!
There'd been several citizens out on the street and the sidewalks when the shooting erupted. Now they stood there watching, shocked, as the men who had just robbed their bank escaped. It looked to Aaron as if they were about to get away clean. Then ahead of them, the man stepped down off the boardwalk and out into the street. Flash of sunlight revealed the fact that a star was fastened to his vest. The bank robbers reared their horses and raised their pistols towards Billy Puckett, who returned the gesture. Billy grabbed his shoulder, then staggered back a step. The sheriff went down under a fusillade of bullets.
You sons of bitches!
Emerging from the saloon, Falcon fired at the bank robbers.
Oh, I'm hit!
Ethan tumbled to the ground. Corey was next.
Corey!
Turning his horse, Frank headed toward Ethan.
Frank, come on, let's go!
God damn it, I ain't leaving Corey and Ethan!
The others hightailed it out of town, leaving Frank behind.
Aaron, come back here! We can't leave him like this!
Frank leapt from his saddle, then knelt beside the two wounded men. Falcon came running up with his gun drawn and pointed directly at Frank.
Stand up.
Who would you be, mister?
The name's McAllister. Falcon McAllister.
What do you take a hand in this for? You ain't no lawman. They're hurt pretty bad. They need a doctor.
The sheriff dies, and they won't be needing a doctor. They'll need an undertaker. All three of you.
By now, the three remaining robbers were well out of town, pushing their horses into a lather to put as much distance between them and the town as they could.
Is anyone coming after us?
Bringing up the rear, Percy looked back over his shoulder at the receding town. He saw no one in pursuit.
No! There ain't no one mounted! We got away clean! Wee-hoo-hoo! We got away clean!
Oh, it's except Ethan, Frank, and Corey. They're still back there.
What the hell got into Frank to go back like that?
We should have gone back for them our own selves.
What the hell you say? If we had, we'd be right there with them now.
But they're our kin.
What could we do for them if we got captured too?
Nothing, I reckon. Why? You planning on something?
Maybe.
By now, others from the town were moving cautiously out into the middle of the street, where Falcon was standing with his three prisoners, Ethan Yerby and Frank and Corey Childers. Ethan had a bullet in his thigh, and Corey had one in his shoulder. Frank wasn't wounded.
How's Billy?
A couple of men were standing over the sheriff, and one of them looked back toward Falcon and shook his head slowly.
The sheriff's dead.
Looks like we've got you boys for murder.
Hey! There's another one over there!
Dunnigan pointed to a body lying in the alley between the sheriff's office and the apothecary that was next door. He ran over to take a look.
It's Eames! Gerald Eames! He's dead! Shot clean through the heart! I need a doctor!
Is there a doctor in town?
Ah, we got Doc Gill. He ain't normally drunk this time of day.
Get him. Bring him down to the jail and have a look at his man.
Falcon waved his pistol toward the sheriff's office, and the three prisoners responded. Thad Howard was standing in his cell, his hands wrapped around the bars.
What happened out there? Where's the sheriff?
Dead. These two killed him. It looks like you're gonna have company on the gallows. All of you, in there.
When Falcon went back outside, he saw several people standing over Billy, looking down at his body. He joined them, then looked up as Emile Prufrock arrived. Prufrock was the undertaker. Falcon recognized him because he had seen him at the depot after the shootout on the train.
Oh, my. Oh, my. It's the sheriff.
I want you to do right by him, Prufrock.
Oh, yes, indeed, I will.
Give him the best coffin you have.
You would be talking about the Eternal Cloud. That is a lovely coffin. But I'm afraid the county can't afford that.
Don't worry about it. I'm paying for it.
Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sure Sheriff Puckett would be so pleased to know that he had such a dear friend. What a wonderful thing you are doing.
Yeah, wonderful.
Walter Merrill was appointed to the office of Sheriff of Belfield, replacing Billy Puckett. Shortly after the new sheriff was appointed, the Honorable Judge Andrew J. Heckmeyer came to Belfield for 2 days of trials. On the first day, he tried Thad Howard. Howard was found guilty of train robbery and as an accessory in the murder of the train engineer and the passenger. For that crime, he was sentenced to 40 years in prison. That sentence was meaningless, however, because the execution warrant for his conviction for murder in the first degree had already been transferred for implementation. On the second day, the Childers brothers, Frank and Corey, and Ethan Yerby were tried. The trial had lasted less than an hour, and the jury had gone out for deliberation. A few minutes later, the bailiff rose to his feet. Falcon and the others awaited both the verdict and the judge's sentence.
All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. This court in and for the County of Stark is now in session. The Honorable Andrew J. Heckmeyer presiding. Your Honor, the jury has reached a verdict.
Wearing a black robe, Judge Heckmeyer entered the courtroom from a door in front, stood behind the bench for a moment, then sat down.
Be seated.
There were four people at the defendant's table. Dan Gilmore, the court-appointed defense counsel, as well as Frank Childers, Corey Childers, and Ethan Yerby. Corey and Ethan were still showing the effects of their gunshot wounds. However, both had recovered sufficiently to stand trial. The three men were being tried not only for the murder of Sheriff Billy Puckett, but also for the murder of Gerald Eames.
This court is now in session. Before we bring in the jury, I would like to address a few remarks to Mr. Falcon McAllister. Mr. McAllister, would you stand, please?
Falcon, who was sitting about halfway toward the back of the court, was surprised by the judge's request. He stood.
Mr. McAllister, There are those who might want to congratulate you for capturing three of the men who robbed the bank and killed Sheriff Billy Puckett. Some might even call you a hero. But I do not share that opinion. Although a comparison of the caliber of the bullet that killed Mr. Eames showed that it wasn't from your gun, I believe you were indirectly, if not directly, responsible for his demise. By engaging the outlaws as you did, you showed reckless disregard for the safety of the citizens of Belfield. For that, sir, I feel that you should not be commended for your action. Rather, you should be chastised. You may sit down.
Falcon, barely able to hold his anger in check after being publicly berated by the judge, sat back down. He could feel the eyes of everyone in the room staring at him.
Now, Mr. Bailiff, if you would, please bring the jury into the courtroom.
The bailiff left the room for a moment, then returned, leading the 12 men who had served on the jury. They were a disparate group consisting of cowboys, farmers, store clerks, draymen, and businessmen. Without a word and without a glance right or left, which might tip off the verdict, they took their seats.
Mr. Foreman, has the jury reached a verdict?
The foreman of the jury, who also owned the gunsmith shop, stood.
We have, Your Honor.
Would the attorney for the defense and the three defendants please stand?
Gilmore, the lawyer for the defendants, and his three clients stood. Heckmeyer turned back toward the foreman of the jury.
Publish the verdict, Mr. Foreman.
Your Honor, on the first charge, the murder of Sheriff Billy Puckett, we, the jury, find the defendants Corey Childers and Ethan Yerby guilty of murder. On the second charge, the murder of Gerald Eames, we, the jury, find the defendants Corey Childers and Ethan Yerby guilty. We find Frank Childers on both counts guilty of bank robbery and reckless endangerment.
So say you all?
So say we all.
Thank you. You may be seated.
Heckmeyer turned toward the defendants, who were still standing.
Order! Mr. Gilmore, please bring the prisoners before the bench.
Corey strolled up defiant and arrogant. Frank was a bit more contrite. Childers, because of the bullet wound in his thigh, limped up to the bench.
Before I pass sentence, do any of you have anything to say?
Do what you have to do, you fat-ass son of a bitch!
Corey, you dumb bastard! You've condemned us all! I should have left your ass in the dirt.
Order! Believe me, Mr. Childers, when I tell you that I will do what I have to do. Frank Childers, you could have gotten away with the others, but you came back to aid your brother and your cousin. Even though you have chosen a life of dishonor, there is some honor in what you did. Also, you were carrying a .36 caliber pistol. None of the bullets taken from Sheriff Puckett's body were .36 caliber. The bullet that killed Mr. Eames was a .45 caliber. That means that you did not kill either one. The jury could not find you guilty of murder, but you are guilty of armed bank robbery, and by the discharge of your weapon, the reckless endangerment of innocent civilians.
Judge Heckmeyer looked out into the galley and fixed a steely and telling gaze upon Falcon, though he didn't address him. Then he returned his attention to Frank Childers.
Therefore, it is the decision of this court that you will be taken to the territorial prison in Bismarck, there to serve a 20-year sentence.
The relief in Frank Childers' face was evident. Heckmeyer turned his attention to Corey and Ethan.
Man is put upon this earth but a short time, and we are obligated by God to spend that short time in such a way as to make the world a better place by our having been here. Some do this by helping others. Some do this by being a faithful steward to the bounty God has bestowed upon us. In your case, Corey Childers, and in your case, Ethan Yerby, the world will be a better place simply by being rid of you. Therefore, the jury, having found you guilty of the murders of Sheriff Billy Puckett and Mr. Gerald Eames, it is my obligation, and though I don't often say this, it is also my satisfaction to make the world a better place by taking you from it. I hereby order, command, and direct that a contrivance be built of sufficient height and strength to elevate you from the ground, and from which you will be hanged by the neck. And there, Hanging from the aforementioned gallows, you both shall remain suspended until all breath has left your bodies, your hearts have ceased to beat, and your blood stops its course. I further order, command, and direct that your bodies shall not be cut down until a doctor ascertains that you are both dead, dead, dead. Unfortunately, my power ends with the termination of your worthless lives, for if I could, I would not only hang you, I would send you to hell. However, I have every faith and confidence that the judge of all men awaits you just on the other side of death's portal, and there is no doubt in my mind but that this judge will take care of that situation for me. This court is adjourned.
The morning of the hanging, there were at least 100 people gathered in the town square, with more arriving by the minute. The gallows stood in the center of the square, its grisly shadows stretching under the morning sun. Judge Heckmeyer had ordered the hanging of Thad Howard to take place at exactly noon. Corey Childers and Ethan Yerby were to meet their fate exactly 1/2 hour after the doctor declared Thad Howard dead. The crowd, already thick and jostling for position, was awaiting the show with eager anticipation. A black-frocked preacher climbed up onto the gallows. The carpenters made last-minute adjustments behind him. The preacher took advantage of the gathered audience. He had a long, narrow face, sunken cheeks, and eyes as black as coal.
In a short time, 3 men are going to be hung. And like you and me, men who woke up this morning to the sweetness of God's on earth, we'll, by the time night rolls around, be 6 hours into the eternal damnation. The never-ending fires will burn their souls, and the pain they feel tonight will be just as severe 10,000 years from now. It's too late for them. Already the devil is making room for them, for they are unrepentant sinners. What about you? Do you want to go to hell?
He pointed to a young boy who was standing in the front row eating popcorn. The boy turned white as a sheet and began shaking so badly that he spilled popcorn from the bag.
Repent! Repent now, you sinners, before it's too late.
Thad Howard, Corey Childers, and Ethan Yerby were in 2 jail cells some 150 feet away from the gallows. Howard was in 1. Corey and Ethan were sharing the other one.
It ain't fair.
What ain't fair?
It ain't fair that the judge sent me and you to hang, but he let Frank go free.
He didn't let Frank go. He put him in prison for 20 years.
Yeah, well, that ain't hanging him, is it?
He come back for us. He didn't have to, but he did. He's your own brother. A body would think it would make you happy knowing he isn't gonna hang.
You know what would make me happy? Knowing I wasn't gonna fucking hang.
Jesus, that fella does preach one rip snorter of a sermon, don't he?
Don't that bother you none?
If it had bothered me, I never would have chose this here life. Why do you ask? Does it bother you?
I confess, I've been thinking about it some.
Yeah, well think about it like this. Most of the folks we know that's dead is probably in hell already. So it'll be just like an old time get together.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess you could kind of look at it like that.
Hey, you, Howard.
Yeah.
Looks like you're gonna get there about 1/2 hour before us. Find us a good cool spot, will you?
Go to hell.
Go to hell? You dumb son of a bitch. What do you think we're talking about? That's exactly what we're all just about to do. Go to hell. That's a good one.
The door to the jailhouse opened and Walter Merrill stepped inside.
Howard, we're ready for you.
Thad, who had been sitting on the bunk, got up and shuffled over to the door of his cell. He had to shuffle because there were shackles on his legs and his arms.
I'll be back for you boys in a little bit.
Well, that's all right, Sheriff. Don't you be hurrying none on our account now. Just take your time.
The new sheriff took Thad outside, led him through the crowd to the gallows.
Get back! Get back! Get back out of the way and give us some room. Ain't you got no decency? This here man's about to meet his maker.
Thad was led up the steps, then out onto the gallows platform. stood there for a moment, looking out over the crowd. In his entire life, he had never seen so many people gathered in one place before.
Now, we got us two traps here, and... Thad? Thad, pay attention here. We want to do this right.
Sorry. What was it you were saying to me?
I was saying we got us two traps here, because we're going to hang the next two together. Since you're first, you can take your choice of which one.
This first one here will do.
Well, I come over here and stand on the trapdoor.
Thad complied, and as he stood there, they removed the chains, but tied his feet together with rope, then tied his arms down by his side.
You want some time with the preacher?
Thad looked over at the man who but moments ago had been haranguing the crowd.
Shit, no. I'd rather go straight to hell than have that son of a bitch praying over my soul. I don't even want him standing up here on that scaffold with me.
Repent! Repent, you sinner, before it's too late!
Get that sorry asshole away from me!
You heard him, preacher. Step on down now.
The preacher left the scaffold, but halfway down the 13 steps, he turned and pointed back toward Thad.
You have just condemned your soul to eternal torment!
Go to hell!
You got any last words? Anything you want to say?
Thad looked out into the faces of the men, women, and children who were gathered to watch him hang.
I see a great many people here, but not one I could call a friend.
Hell! You killed everyone that ever called themselves your friend!
The hood was placed over Thad's face. As the hangman dropped the noose around his neck, Thad tensed up, lifting his shoulders and shortening his neck. The hangman leaned close to him.
Don't tense up, Mr. Howard. It'll go easier for you if you're relaxed.
How the hell does a body relax when you're about to break his neck?
I'm just telling you for your own good. Whether you're tense or not, you're gonna die. It'll just be easier on you if you don't try and fight it. Just let it happen.
Stop your palavering and get this over with.
Whatever you say, Mr. Howard. I figure you got about 30 seconds left in this world.
The hangman stepped back to the edge of the gallows platform, put his hand on the lever, then looked over at the sheriff. Sheriff Merrill nodded.
Looks like old Howard is gone.
Yeah.
Corey, think it's gonna hurt?
Hell yeah, it's gonna hurt, you dumb son of a bitch.
Hey, Frank, Corey, Ethan, in there?
Corey and Ethan looked at each other in surprise. Then Corey got up from the bunk and walked over to look through the window. Aaron was standing in the alley just behind the jail building, a big smile on his face.
Howdy, boys.
Aaron, what are you doing here?
Me and the boys have come to get you out. Where's Frank?
That lucky son of a bitch ain't a-gonna hang. They sent him back to territorial prison in Bismarck.
You're the lucky ones. He's in prison. But I'm about to get you boys out. You got something you can get under, like maybe a mattress or something?
There's straw mattresses on these here cots. What'd you ask that for?
Well, my advice to you two boys is to get over in the corner and cover up with them mattresses. Because I'm about to blow up this here wall.
Whoa, whoa, whoa! You think that's wise? We could get killed!
Hell, you're going to get killed anyway, ain't you? If you're going to die, you might as well die trying to escape.
He's right. Come on, let's cover up.
Corey grabbed the mattress.
Get back. I'm lighting the fuse right now. You're still alive?
Corey and Ethan threw aside the mattress that had provided them with protection and stood up.
Merrily.
Get mounted. Let's get out of here.
When the dynamite went off, it was so loud that it broke windows out on the street. Thad's body had been cut down. At the explosion, the preacher leapt down from the gallows and fell to the ground, covering his head with his arms. For several moments, nobody got around their fear quickly enough to figure out what was going on. It wasn't until someone saw smoke rising from the alley behind the jail that anyone got suspicious.
The jail! The explosion was over at the jail!
My prisoners!
Come on!
And A half dozen of those nearest the sheriff ran along with him to see what happened. And they ran into the alley. All their questions were answered. The entire back wall of the jail building was gone. Destroyed.
Son of a bitch! They got away!
The escaped prisoners were little more than 5 miles away when Corey's horse went lame.
Hold it up! Hold it up, fellas!
What is it? What's wrong?
You give me a lame horse. This here animal can't go another mile.
We can't stop now.
Look behind you, Ethan. Do you see anyone coming?
No.
No, and you ain't likely to neither. They got him a new sheriff in that town. He don't know whether to pick his nose or scratch his ass. And I don't picture him for the type to pull a bunch of citizens together to form a posse to run us down, neither. More than likely, he'll just wait and see what the U.S. Marshals do about it.
So what are you saying, Corey? That we can just stay here?
No, I ain't saying nothing of the kind. All I'm saying is we don't have to run around like chickens with our heads cut off. We got time to find me a horse that ain't broke down.
Looks like there's a farm or a ranch or some such place up ahead a piece.
All right, let's head for it.
Mary Douglas opened the oven to check on her biscuits. The 19-year-old woman was a mail-order bride, married but 3 months to a man she had never met until he came to St. Louis to claim her. She had answered an ad in a magazine. The biscuits were golden brown, and she smiled, pleased. Luke loved her biscuits.
Luke, what are you doing in so early? It's...
Mary turned and saw three strange men.
Well, now, looky here, will you? I believe this little lady has dinner all ready for us.
Who are you?
We're just some friendly neighbors. Drop by for dinner.
Aaron walked over to the stove, picked up a biscuit, and took a bite.
Neighbors? Are you friends of Luke's?
Tasty. Luke's. Yeah, we're friends of Luke's.
I'm Mary, Luke's wife. Luke didn't say anything about having guests for lunch. I'm not sure I cooked enough.
What you got here is fine.
Aaron, Percy, and Ethan helped themselves to biscuits and bacon. Mary watched in shock as they tore open biscuits and layered bacon onto them.
What the hell, Aaron? Are you taking all the bacon?
Ain't that much. Just dip your biscuit in the bacon grease.
I just put some of these fried taters on mine.
Percy scooped up a handful of fried potatoes and layered them on his biscuit. Corey and Dalton walked in the open door.
Oh, y'all better get some of this grub while you got a chance. Did you find a horse?
Yeah, there was a good-looking mare in the barn. I done got her saddled.
You saddled Rhoda?
Oh, that the horse's name? Good. They always ride a little better when you know their name.
You're not friends of Luke at all, are you?
Never heard of him.
Then I must ask you to get out of my house.
Listen to her. She's got spunk. Now you gotta give her that.
Aaron, look out!
Mary had picked up a poker. But thanks to Dalton's timely warning, Aaron was able to jump out of the way.
Get out of my house!
Mary raised the poker for another swing. Mary was knocked back by the impact of the bullet. She looked down to see a dark, ugly wound in her left breast. Blood was spreading quickly over her dress. Corey Childress stood looking down at Mary lying lifeless on the floor, holding a smoking gun in his hand.
What the hell did you shoot her for?
What do you mean, what did I shoot her for? The bitch was trying to kill you. Or didn't you notice?
Hell, couldn't you have stopped her without killing her? As long as she was alive, we could have had a little fun with her.
Is she dead?
Dalton got down to look at her, putting his hand on her neck.
What about it? Is she dead?
Yeah.
What do we do now?
We'll look around. Take anything we can use. Then we'll burn the house.
Luke Douglas had been clearing land, and he was walking home for lunch when he heard the shot. He had no idea what it was, but it had frightened him, and he had broken into a run. As he reached the clearing where his house stood, he saw 5 men outside. At first, he was confused as to who they were and why they were there. Then he noticed that one of the saddled horses was a golden palomino.
That's Rhoda! Who are you, man? What are you doing here? Why is Rhoda saddled?
At that moment, the first flames burst through the windows of the house.
Oh, my God! house is on fire! Where's Mary?
Was that your woman's name?
Was?
Luke ran toward the house, trying to go inside, but by now the flames were so high that he couldn't get through the door.
You bastards!
To the surprise of everyone, Luke launched himself from the porch, knocking Corey from the saddle as he did so. Two men fell to the ground, and in the struggle, Luke managed to get Corey's gun, sticking the gun in Corey's belly.
Son of a bitch, he just shot Corey!
Rolling away from Corey, with Corey's gun in his hand, Luke shot a second time, knocking Ethan from his saddle. Aaron, Dalton, and Percy all drew their guns. Aaron checked on his brother Corey while Dalton checked on Ethan.
Ethan's dead.
Yeah, so's Corey. Come on, let's get out of here before the fire starts bringing neighbors.
What about Corey and Ethan?
What about them?
Well, are we just gonna leave them here?
Yeah.
No. No way I'm gonna just leave my brothers here.
Dalton, Aaron's right.
What the hell do you have to do with this? Ain't neither one of them your brother.
No. But they was both my friends, and if we leave them here, folks will think they killed each other.
Dalton was quiet for a moment, then he nodded.
All right. All right, I reckon I can see that, but it doesn't seem right to just leave them lying here without doing something. I mean, shouldn't we say some words over them or something?
Whatever words you want to say, you can say from the goddamn saddle, Dalton. Mount up and let's get the hell out of here, now!
Falcon McAllister was about 2 miles away when he saw the smoke.
Diablo, there's only one thing that could make that much smoke out here on the plains. Someone's home on fire.
Yeah!
Falcon didn't know whether he could get there in time to help save the house. From the looks of the smoke, he probably couldn't. But he knew that whoever owned that house would welcome any kind of help he could give. By the time Falcon reached the location, the structure of the house had collapsed in on itself, so that only flames and smoke remained. Through the smoke, he saw 3 bodies lying on the ground. He dismounted and hurried to them. 2 of the men he recognized immediately. They were the 2 men who had been tried and convicted for the murder of Billy Puckett. He had not stayed around for the hanging and was surprised to see him here. He went over to check the 3rd man, saw that he was still alive, though barely. Falcon knelt beside him.
Who are you?
Douglas. Luke Douglas.
What happened here?
My wife. She's in the house.
Falcon looked toward what had been the house, but was now so much kindling wood.
I see what I can do.
They took Rhoda. She's a Palomino. I bought her from Mary.
I'll get her back for you.
Falcon's words fell on deaf ears. Douglas was dead. Falcon rose and began looking around. On first sight, it appeared as if Corey Childers and Ethan Urby had fought it out with Luke Douglas. But as he examined the evidence, he saw that things weren't as they initially appeared. Corey Childers didn't have a gun, not in his hand, not in his holster. Ethan Urby did have a gun, but it was in his holster and hadn't been fired. 2 bullets had been fired from the gun in Douglas's hand. Oddly, he wasn't wearing a holster, which led Falcon to believe that somehow he must have gotten Corey's gun. On the other hand, Luke Douglas had 3 bullet wounds, so somebody shot him. The question was, who? Making a wider examination of the area, Falcon saw that 5 horses had left the farm. However, from the depth of the hoof marks, it was obvious that 2 of the horses were not being ridden. It was also obvious by the tracks that 1 of the horses had come from the barn. When Falcon found the tracks approaching the farm, he saw that there were only 4 horses, though 1 of them was carrying double. Evidently, they had come to steal a horse and anything else they could find. The farmer and wife had resisted. Falcon walked out to the barn and found a spade. He dug 2 graves in the soft dirt of the woman's garden. By the time he was finished, the fire was burned down, and looking through the ash, he found what was left of Douglas's woman. He turned his head aside when he saw the blackened, twisted body.
I'm glad you didn't have to see this, Mr. Douglas.
Finding a piece of tarpaulin in the barn, he got her body into it and dragged it out to one of the graves. He put Luke Douglas in another piece he found and closed both of them. When he was done, he stood there for a long moment, his hat in his hand.
Lord, take care of these two. Put them back together. And if you need any help in seeing to them, why, I reckon my Marie would be glad to give you a hand. And if you've a mind to, you might help me track down the murdering bastards who did this. It doesn't look like there's anyone else around to settle the score, so I'm gonna do it. Amen.
The buzzards had arrived, and emboldened by the fact that Falcon was leaving, circled above.
You boys have yourselves a feast on those two bastards.
Carrion Eaters settled on the two bodies left unburied. When Aaron Dalton and Percy reached the top of the pass, they stopped to give their horses a breather. Aaron handed the reins of his horse to Dalton.
Here.
What are you handing those to me for? I'm already leading one horse beside my own.
Hold him. I want to see if the son of a bitch is still back there.
What? What son of a bitch? Back where?
If you didn't have your head stuck up your ass, you'd know we're being followed, and have been for the last 2 hours.
Damn. No, I didn't know that.
Percy, hold our horses.
What the hell? Do I look like a hitching rail?
Nah. Every hitching rail I've ever seen is better looking than you are.
Dalton stepped over to the side of the trail and urinated on a bush.
Ah. I just pissed that grasshopper off his limb.
Aaron lay on his stomach on a flat rock and looked back down the trail. He saw a lone rider coming slowly. And from the way he was acting, Aaron knew exactly that he was trailing him.
Dalton, hand me my long gun.
Dalton, finished with his own business now, pulled Aaron's rifle from the saddle sheath and handed it to him.
He's too far away, even with a rifle.
I just want the son of a bitch to know he ain't fooling nobody.
Aaron raised the rifle to his shoulder. Falcon happened to look up just as Aaron fired. He saw the muzzle flash and the puff of smoke. The bullet wasn't even close enough for him to determine where it struck. Falcon smiled, not so much because the gunman had missed widely, but because it told him that he was on the right track. Of course, that also told the people ahead that they were being followed, and he knew that he would not be able to go through the pass as long as they held it. For the time being, he was stopped. Falcon dismounted and led his horse over to a clump of rocks to get him out of the way of any lucky shot. He'd been so busy trailing the three men that he had not paid any attention to the sky. Now, as he looked up, he saw heavy black clouds building up in the west. Within minutes, it began to rain. Just a few drops at first, but they were large, heavy drops. Falcon took his poncho from his saddle roll, put it on, then hunkered down under an overhang, trying to find some shelter from the rain. His horse stood nearby with large, soulful eyes, clearly miserable in the downpour.
Well, sorry, Diablo. I know you're not liking it much, but I've got no place to put you to get you out of this.
As the rain continued, the water started pouring down the mountainside, turning the trail into a sluice. Brown, muddy water cascaded down the mountain path. Not only did it prevent Falcon from going up the trail, but he knew that it would also erase all tracks, making it pointless to follow the outlaw. Meanwhile, further up the mountain, Aaron, Dalton, and Percy also found themselves at a standstill.
Come on, let's go.
Let's go? What, are you crazy? In case you ain't noticed, it's pouring.
Yeah. And in case you ain't noticed, the rain is washing out all our tracks. If we go now, we can be well out of here before the fella that's following us knows we're gone.
Why don't we just wait here and kill the son of a bitch?
I don't believe he's gonna be all that easy to kill. I think I've figured out who he is.
Who?
Falcon McAllister.
Son of a bitch. You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Who's Falcon McAllister?
He's the one come out shooting back in Belfield when we held up the bank. You might remember he shot Ethan and Corey. And when Frank went back after him, why, he got caught too.
What kind of fella is he?
Who he is depends on who's doing the telling. Some call him a gunfighter, some say he's just a drifter.
One thing is sure. He's a dead shot, he's good with a knife, and he can track a buzzard shadow.
Seems to me that a fella like that would make a lot of enemies. I mean, you seen the way he butted into our business back there.
Oh, he's made a lot of enemies, all right.
And there ain't nobody ever gone after him yet?
Oh, yeah.
What happened?
The lucky ones didn't find him. Hya!
Without waiting for the others, Aaron rode off into the rain. Dalton and Percy had to scramble quickly to get mounted and follow.